Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast. I am Pat Moore from NBC Sports Chicago. Mike's Eye with Steve Conroy and Brian Campbell. How you guys doing?
Doing great. How about you, Pat?
Doing all right. It's kind of been just this season. It's just been up and down, two steps forward, three steps back. I want to, on this podcast, you know, we're not going to break down games per se. We're going to look to next year and try to figure out what's part of the big picture and what may have to change. And what I thought was going to have to change was the makeup of the blue line. It's been a been a problem for the Hawks this season, as a lot of things are: power play, goaltending at times, you know, big stars not scoring, all that sort of stuff. But focusing on the defense, with the signings this week of Jan Ruta and Gustafsson, you know, basically Osterley, Gustafsson, Dahlstrom, Ruta, Murphy, Keith, and of course Seabrook are all under contract. So. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, they could make some moves, but it also points to, like, they're okay with some of these guys, and they're bringing them back into the fold. Were you surprised that kind of the band is coming back together and there's been a lot of questions about them?
You know, I understand your question, but not really, and only because I look at the way this team played over the first, let's say at the third of the season, we're mid-December, and the Blackhawks were in a playoff spot at that point, and I think a couple of the better defensemen at that time were Jan Ruta and Gustav Forsling. Now, their play did drop off, especially just after Christmas, into the new year. Forsling got sent to the minors. Jan Ruta has been in and out of the lineup. He got injured a couple of different times, too. But I've liked their game, and I think this is what Stan Bowman's thinking. These guys, and not Ruta because he's 27, but Forsling's only, 22, 23 years of age. A guy like Jordan Osterley is only 25. He figures because they're defensemen, they're still going to be getting better. And they've taken some setbacks at times, and I agree. And Osterley over the last half dozen games has taken a bit of a step back. But again, a bounce back game tonight here against Carolina in the loss. So I think what he's hoping is these guys will continue to improve. And as you mentioned too, it doesn't mean they can't still make a deal for a top two, top three defenseman, which, you know, I'm in your camp. I think that's what the Blackhawks will need for next year.
Yeah, for me, I think, you know, obviously it comes down to money, and it's a money situation for the Blackhawks, and they'd love to go out and get anybody. But for me, I think they need somebody that can push this pace of the games and being able to get up into the play and maybe even play some minutes, some big minutes on the power play. I think you look around the league and what teams have those guys, and they have a lot of success, whether it's Hedman in Tampa Bay or Letang or Schultz in Pittsburgh, Brent Burns. I know these guys are star players, but, you know, hopefully even they have that in Yukihara, and if he can play. I know it's a big ask to have a 19-year-old come in here and play those minutes, but, you know, you look at McAvoy in Boston who's come in and play, and so, you know, they Ian Mitchell they drafted as well. You know, those are guys, he's been playing the power play for Denver all season. So whether they have it in their system already or they have to go out and find a guy or a diamond in the rough, kind of like they found Osterley a little bit, I really feel like they need to find that puck control moving guy that'll make that just makes your forward so much better as well and creates so many goals for not in just his points that he gets, but all around for your hockey club.
We've been saying for a good portion of this season that the makeup of these defensive unit is a lot of fives and sixes that we're asking to play top 4 minutes. And, you know, it'd be nice to see Yukiharu come through next year as a 19-year-old. But, like, if we come in with so many question marks, hoping that the guys this year somehow get some more seasoning and they develop, then, you know, we're asking a lot. So I agree with you. I think that they do need to go out and secure a top four defenseman and other, you know, and Duncan Keith needs to start playing like a top two defenseman. And, you know, your thoughts on what you've seen from Dunk's game. We keep talking about all the miles these guys have logged. Well, now it's going to be three consecutive long off seasons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can't use they're tired anymore as an excuse. Now, you can point back to all the miles they have on those skates. I get it. But then it's not going to be fixed, so to speak, you know, in a longer off season. So
right.
Let's talk specifically about Duncan Keith and can he find the form that we are so accustomed to seeing?
Listen, I'm the eternal optimist. I think he can. I think he'd be the first to tell you that this was a real off year for him. I mean, anytime, and you know, we're almost through the season, he's got one goal. And here's a guy who plays, you know, top power play minutes and, I mean, top minutes overall. I mean, he averages well over 24 minutes per game. So, you know, one goal just isn't going to sit well with him. And I think he'd be the first to tell you that. I've heard him talk in the past about possibly changing his workout routine. So whatever he's done in the past, and that goes for a few guys, they might have to change things up. I think the NHL has changed just in the last two or three years, and we'll hear Brian talk soon, shortly, but I think he'd be the first to agree that, you know, even in the last couple of years, we've seen a huge change in the NHL, and it's all about speed, and it's not about size, and it's not about toughness anymore. You've got to have quick hands and quick feet, and you've got to be able to think quick. And, you know, whether these guys can train that way, I heard Duncan Keith talking about possibly changing his workout routine, so he'll maybe, and he's a fast guy to begin with, but he wants to work on it so he can get maybe just a little bit quicker.
Yeah, for me, he's 34 this year, and believe me, I think Dunks is a great player. Oh, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Someday he will be in the Hall of Fame, and we all know that. And I think for him, I think a little bit comes to their team has had struggles, so Duncan's so used to being playing, you know, for Stanley Cups or gold medals. It's, you know, this is different hockey for him to play, and I'm sure it's extremely hard for him to get motivated for these games, especially down the stretch. I know how I started when I started feeling not as good on the ice, and it is around that age. So I still think he can be a top defenseman, but I don't think you can ask for him to carry the load that he did in previous years and throughout his career. So I think he can still be a top two guy, but you got to find some compliments to him. He's had different partners as well all season.
Yeah, that's
a
good point too.
He started out with Seabrook, Connor Murphy, Osterley. You know,
he's pretty much played with them all.
Yeah, and where's his compliment there that's going to have him some success? And obviously he's had two partners basically for the last 10 years, and Brent Seabrook and Nicholas Jarmelson. So those are the only guys he's basically played with. And, you know, I think for Dunks, it's a case of, you know, he can be that guy, but I don't think you should over I know the miles he's played and everything, but he's going to be 35 next season, and he's one of the best in-shape guys in the league. So I don't know what else he can specifically do to change up that's going to make that major difference. And the game's faster. You know, Steve talked about it. This game is so much quicker. That's why Nicholas Lidstrom, the game stayed the same speed. That's why he could play till he's 40. But now you see these guys dropping off a lot quicker in the NHL. And, you know, do I think I could have played another year? Yeah, but the game just went crazy the last couple of years. It's turned into a flip the puck out and chase it down kind of game, and it's made and built for these young kids now.
One of those deep pairing partners for Dunks was Connor Murphy, you had mentioned, and Connor's 24 years of age. He was obviously the big part of the Jalmerson deal. He's got a cap hit of $3.8 million per season, and while you know, the thought was when Stan acquired him that he would be a top four defenseman. What I see on the ice is not top four production. Take the Carolina game for example. It's his stick in the passing lane that the puck goes off of and in the back of the net for the Slavin goal. He was on the ice as the power play ends and they hit Justin Williams on the long stretch pass for the breakaway goal. Okay, maybe not totally, but there were other turnovers. And I'm not. This is just one game. I mean, this is stuff we've seen throughout the season. Foot speed doesn't always seem to be there. Doesn't exactly always know when to pinch, ill-advised pinches. What have you seen from Connor Murphy? And give us an honest assessment of where his ceiling could be. Can he be a top four D-man?
Well, he'll tell you, tonight he was maybe the worst Blackhawk on the ice, and I think he'd be the first to admit that. Now, you go back to the last game against Colorado, I thought he was one of the better defensemen on the back end. He and Gustafson really stood out on the back end. So I think with Connor, it's been inconsistency. It's kind of the story of the Blackhawks this year, not being able to string together three and four and five solid games in a row. I've seen some flashes of really good play, and then I've seen games like tonight where, you know, maybe he's the worst player on the ice. Would I put him in a top four? Yeah, he'd be a three and four. He's not going to be a power play guy. He certainly could be a top penalty killer, but he hasn't shown that consistency yet, and that's the biggest thing. Listen, we don't have a physical defense, and, you know, Brent Seabrook is getting less physical with each passing year. I think that Connor Murphy can be that guy. I think Connor Murphy's got a great shot when he gets it on net. I'd like to see him shoot it a little more. And it's not just his slap shot. He's got a great wrist shot, a great snapshot. Those are weapons that I think with a little more experience, a few more miles under his belt, he'll be better at doing that. But, you know, he's not going to be a top two defenseman, but I'd love to see him kill, you know, be the first guy out there killing penalties and being on that shutdown pair. Right now he's not that guy, and I think he's his own worst enemy. We got to get him that book that Vinny Hinostroza read in the offseason. You know, what to say when you talk to yourself. Because I can see when he makes a mistake on the ice, his next shift out there is not going to be very good because he's beating himself up on the bench. He's just got to let it go and just go out there and worry about the next shift.
Yeah, he needs to find some confidence and consistency with his confidence. And when he did come into the league, though, when he started in Arizona, he was a power play guy. He was playing, you know, maybe it was the second unit, but he was playing some power play. So you kind of like him to find that offense a little bit more in him. And being 24 years old, you still feel like, you know, he should be contributing that way. So, he's a first-round pick to Arizona. You know, you expect those out of those guys to produce and help out. So I think he's got it in him. I think it just comes down to a lot of confidence, but and where he fits. You know, they've moved him around with different partners all year because they're trying to find some consistency with him. And you know, he struggled at that. So, you know, it's something that, Joel and his staff are going to have to figure out where you want to fit him in and who to play him with and what side and left, right. He's switching all over the map, and I just don't know if he's an established player enough to be switching around as much, and then that lowers his confidence.
We'll wrap up this segment of Blue Liner Talk here with this question for the former Blue Liners, Steve Conroy and Brian Campbell, of Jan Ruta, of Erik Gustafsson, and Jordan Osterley. Who do you have the most confidence in from what you've seen this year to become a more reliable fixture on the blue line of that group? I was going to put Dahlstrom in there, but I think he's more on the fence of whether, you know, he'll even be a part of this team. So I'm going to keep it as Ruta, Gustafsson, and Osterley.
Can I add one? Can I
sure.
add Forsling?
Sure, yeah.
Only because, you know, he was a top four defenseman here.
But Soupy went down and saw him in Rockford recently, right?
I know it was one game. I just want to see him have that extra, I'm going to take over this game. And I, you know, that attitude with him, if he could find that, I do believe he can be a really good defenseman. But he's got – you see it in – I'm not saying he's Duncan Keith, but you see it in really good players. You see it in Nick Schmaltz. I'm going to take over this game. You see it in DeBrincat. You see it. You've seen it in Duncan and Taves and Kane and Seabrook over the years. And for me, I haven't seen that. Like, he has the ability to get up into the play and make things happen, but he defers. Mm-hmm. You have to – he needs to find that confidence to be the guy that, okay, I'm going to take this over. I'm going to take this puck up the ice, and I'm going to be leading this rush, and I'm going to – you know, he has that in him, but it's too many times where he's just complacent and just playing a simple, solid game. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work in today's NHL very much anymore. You have to skate and move the puck and move your feet as a defenseman.
Yeah, and I was seeing that at times over the first half of this year prior to him being sent down. Now, I'm not making an excuse for him. Now, is this what you saw when you went down to Rockford?
It just was a basic, simple game, and that's what I saw. And I'm like, okay, I want to see him take over this game.
Yeah.
He has that ability.
Right.
You know, and I look at those three defensemen. We had the fourth, you know. I like Osterley's game at times, but he needs to kind of ring it in. But that's what I see in Forsling personally. And I really like, you know, I played with him last year, and I like him. And he needs, you know, you sometimes have to nudge him a bit.
So let me ask you this. It sounds like he hasn't earned the ticket to come back up. But, like, this is probably – they only have one more call-up, and we all think it's going to be John Hayden. But, of course, there could be a quote-unquote injury call-up situation where somebody gets injured. But would you like to see him here over the last handful of games just to see if that lights the fire in him a little?
I would, because sometimes and this shouldn't be the case, but sometimes a guy gets a taste in the NHL, then he gets sent to the minors,
right?
And they pout a little bit and they sulk. And I don't know if that's the case with him, and I hope it's not, but you don't see the true player. And to give him another chance, yeah, I'd give him another shot at it. There were some games – early this year, I thought he was our best defenseman.
I agree. I remember I saw Ulf Samuelsson. I'm like, Forsling was unbelievable tonight. I would like to see him back up here. I think you need to, you know, give him that, and you need to motivate him a little bit as well. And his teammates need to motivate him and tell him how good of a player he can be, and he is. So for me, I'd rather see him than Hayden up here if you could only call up one.
Right. Okay. Well, let's hope that you know, from your voice on this podcast to the transaction wire that he's able to come up, because I'm with you guys. I'd like to see it as well. I thought we had an interesting poll question on the postgame show that Soupy came up with. You know, in the wake of seeing Jeff Berube with, I think, a couple of really nice starts here, although in a losing effort against Carolina, and I thought once Glass exited stage right, we saw some more consistent play from Anton Forsberg. Yeah. The question on the postgame show was, who's your front runner to be Corey's backup next year? Is it Berube? Is it Forsberg? Or is that goalie not on the roster? The fans at home voted, and they went with not on the roster. How would you guys vote?
I think he's on the roster. It's going to be either Anton Forsberg or J.F. Berube. I've liked both of the way they've both played. Berube, I don't think his body of work has been big enough yet. Forsberg obviously struggled early. He's been a lot better of late. You know, both of those guys. And listen, breaking into the NHL as a goaltender, the toughest position of any. And they talk about being a defenseman. Yeah, it's tough, but it's nothing like being a goaltender. So, you know, they're taking their lumps right now. And Berube's played, you know, very well his last couple of games. I think Forsberg's shown flashes of being an NHL backup goalie too. So I don't think you have to go outside the organization. I think both of these guys, you know, they'll probably split the last few games. I don't think, you know, let's say that Corey Crawford doesn't come back. What do we have left? 14 games?
14 yep. games.
So I bet you they both get at least a half dozen, which is good. And whoever plays the best out of that probably has the best chance next year of being the backup.
Yeah, I've liked Forsling at times. Sure, you know, I think he's been left out to dry a few times, and then he hasn't played that great sometimes. Forsberg. But I do believe it's in the locker room, the goalie. And first off, let's get Corey healthy. Hopefully he comes back and he's, you know, feeling better. And hopefully he even gets on the ice still this year in practice and see what happens. But for me, they got four back-to-backs left in the season. So they're each going to get at least four games. And, you know, it's a showcase down the stretch here. And that's how it should be. And going into next year, and I think that person, I think it'll be a showcase in training camp, but it'll be, I'm sure that person will have a little bit of a leg up on the other guy.
Okay, let's finish this podcast up on the forwards. And on these final 14 games, I'm going to start while you guys gather your thoughts. I'm going to tell you what I would like to see. So I would like to see, you know, I understand the nuclear option of Kane and Taves. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see it anymore. They're best when they're apart. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to Schmaltz in the middle, Kane on the right side, and I would like DeBrincat to get 7 games on the left side with Kane and Schmaltz. And if that doesn't work, give me Vinny on that side. And I would like to see that. I'd like to – we always try to talk about finding chemistry. Schmaltz has chemistry with Kane. Let's see if they can develop some momentum to carry them into an offseason. I just – that's something I would like to see. From a forwards perspective, what would you like to see here from these guys, the final 14?
I'm in your camp on that. Let's call them the second line, the Schmaltz line, because I think Schmaltz eventually will be, you know, the future of this team down the middle. He's that kind of player. He's developing very well defensively. Offensively, I think he's just he's miles ahead of a lot of guys in this league. So, you know, you put him at center with Kane, and you can rotate either, you know, Vinny in there with DeBrincat. On that second, what we call him the first line, so I'll keep calling him the first line, Jonathan Toews line with Brandon Saad, I'd like to see Duclair get another shot there. And if it's not Duclair, you know, whoever it is, let's say it's Yurko, give somebody an opportunity, but give him 3 or 4 games there and give him some time to try and develop some chemistry. You're not going to make the playoffs. You know, I think that's kind of a foregone conclusion now. So try to establish, you know, some chemistry with those guys, maybe a little bit of momentum, you know, heading into the off season, and you know, give this guy, because it looks like Saad will be together with Kane or with Taves next year. Give that guy who's going to play the right side a little taste right now, and let him prove himself. And you know, it, you know, I guess that puts Anisimov off on the third line, and I don't think it really matters who you kind of rotate in there. Energy guys, checking line, whatever it is, and your fourth line is your fourth line. And if Hayden comes up, you know, maybe he gets stuck in there somewhere.
I'm okay with Anisimov on that. And you know, and here, let me just throw something crazy at you. If you want to try something different, maybe you put Anisimov in the middle and try Taves on the wing with Saad, and you know, let Johnny take draws. But but you know, look,
look at Claude Giroux. It's kind of revived him a little bit. I'm not saying that's the thing to do, but that's an example you could use if you want to.
Yeah, there you go.
If
you're, you know, then you have your net front presence. You've got Johnny to take draws, and you just see if a different look for 19 gives him some sort of perspective or juice to his game. I don't know.
The only thing, the nice thing too, is if Johnny takes draws, but then he's not exerting as much energy and on the wing. And I think that's kind of what they did with Drew there. They kind of let him kind of play more offense, and that's probably something you could do. I never thought of that. That's a good point. But to me, the best line this season with Johnny was Johnny, Saad, and Vinny Hinostroza.
Yeah,
they were, and I think Vinny adds that character. And then the other line, you know, it's either Anisimov, Schmaltz, and Kane. Or we've always talked about DeBrincat being on that line and put Anisimov on the third line. But you have 14 games left. Go run with it for 10 games.
Yeah, let's try.
If they don't score a couple games,
not going to be any different than what we normally see.
You know, maybe, you know, you just say, okay, these are your lines. You guys run with it. You're going to get a 10-game shot or a 6-game shot. And let's see what happens with those lines.
All right, boys.
Pat Bowman. I like that idea.
Pat Bowman, yeah.
I like the idea of Anisimov in the middle, Johnny on the left side, because Johnny's great along the boards.
Yeah.
I really like his work along the boards. And as Soupy said, he doesn't have to play the 200-foot game, so all of a sudden he's got more energy.
So we'll see. Let's play around with it.
Yeah.
All right.
get your go home and play your video game. See how it works on the video game.
We'll see. All right, boys. Great job as always. Thanks for joining us this week on the podcast. That is going to do it for the Hawks Talk podcast. For Brian Campbell, Steve Conrad, I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.